Hey, everybody. You've reached the Mayfair Podcast. I'm Eric.
And this is Josh. It is Saturday, April 13th.
Whoa, you didn't even have to look.
It's because I'm so mad that it's not Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, and I was listening to last week's podcast yesterday, which feels like 100 years ago now. But anyways, and yeah, and we made a big deal about that. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's not Friday the 13th and we're not having fun. And wait, also, this is how I talk now. Dawn of the Dead played last night then, right?
Yeah.
And it did great.
Were you
great.
Here last night?
I was at Queens of the Stone Age, which was also important.
Did somebody open for them or was it just them?
Yeah, the Struts. Which
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't super familiar, but it was one of those openers where a bunch of people were like, this is a big deal. Like, they're really good and this and that. And I kind of got the vibe that they were kind of a, like, punky type band. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I did not listen. A lot of times, like, I won't listen ahead of time because I'm like, I'm going to be there anyway, whatever, you know. And it's a different vibe live, usually.
Yeah, it's like a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. And so then when we got there, our timing was good, but I'm also not in a rush. I'm like, I don't mind if I miss 5 minutes of the opener because you're going to hear it throughout the arena, you know.
Yeah.
And so we kind of walked, took our time, and we got there. They weren't bad by any means, but they were a lot more. There was almost like an 80s undercurrent to
okay,
their stuff,
yeah.
Which again, fine, but it's not the vibe that I thought it was going to be. And I was like, they were okay, but the one song, I swear, I'm wrong, but at the time I swore that it was a cover of that, You Had a Bad Day, or whatever. But he was doing it kind of like whatever in their British band, you know. I was like, Nick, like, I'm pretty sure this is that Bad Day song. And like, it was not. I don't know. That's not a great first impression, unless you love that song, which is, you know, good, but...
That's like, I watched, I think it's just called Beastie Boys Documentary.
They did, that's the title?
I think so, yeah. Spike Jonze did it.
Yeah.
And it's the two surviving members kind of doing a two-person show, and there's like a slideshow and video clips and stuff like that.
I do remember that, but I don't know it enough to tell you what the title
was. We got so many requests to screen it, and sadly, it's the age we're in with some movies where it was... Straight to Apple TV.
Uh-huh. Was it? They didn't. Did they do it through oscilloscope?
I think so. Yeah, but we couldn't get it. So I don't know if they just it was screened for a week at a couple cinemas and then went on. But I wish we could have seen it on the big screen.
It's weird though because we're good with oscilloscope. Like we get their stuff all the time.
I bet you with Apple they were probably like, we're buying it, but we want you can understand debate club. You know where they're like, no, we want people to put their eyeballs here.
Yeah, that's like the only time we get the Apple stuff seems to be when they want to get an Oscar, and they're like,
that's exactly it.
You can have it now. We're like, but we didn't want that one.
Yeah, we want the Beastie Boys one. But in the Beastie Boys one, really great documentary, and it's very heartwarming and sad, and when they're talking about their fallen member, they get choked up. But they opened for Madonna early on.
Huh.
And it was when they were in their ironic fight for your right to party that went horribly wrong. And they were like, no, that was a joke. And then bro dudes started coming to their concerts and they were like, we don't like what we've become. But can you imagine Beastie Boys opening for early Madonna? Often it did not go well.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. But it's funny too, because like they also had that song Girls that was like one of their biggest songs. And I believe later in their career, they were like, we shouldn't have written that. We feel bad about that song.
They pretty much got away from performing that whole album relatively quickly because of that. But they were like, a lot of those songs were written in jest.
Yeah.
And people did not take them in jest.
Well, no, because like I was in high school and I remember specifically trying to play that, I don't know if you call it a riff, I guess, but like trying to play that bit on the xylophone. Like everyone, like every kid, you know, we were all playing Girls on the xylophone. That was the thing. And so like that was probably the first Beastie Boys song I knew because it's a pop hit, basically.
That's like, hilarious.
Yeah, and then later on in life when you're just like, oh yeah, if you really pay attention to the lyrics, because we didn't really pay attention that much.
Oh yeah, I have a friend who, I think this was years back because my fake niece is a teenager grown up now.
Jeez.
But I think it was Lady Gaga, where he walked into a room and she was listening to Lady Gaga and he was like, oh, that's cool. And then the lyrics hit and he was like, oh, wait. But the kid wasn't paying attention to the lyrics or anything.
No, they don't get any of that. Well, especially like a sexual undercurrent of stuff. Not Lady Gaga necessarily, but just, you know, songs where like you hear it later in life and you're like,
oh, yeah.
Wow, every rock song is about sex.
God, I remember hearing Mama Kissed Santa Claus later in life. I swear, and going, wait a minute.
Some of those are like quite creepy. And that's not even getting into a, like, it's cold outside scenario. That's just a whole other.
I mean, it's early to talk about Christmas, but that makes me sad because I really love Elf. And there's a nice scene in Elf where they sing that song. And if you don't pay attention to it, it's a nice song. But then you kind of listen to it, and it's pretty easy to be a left-wing do-gooder and be like, Oh, I don't know about that song.
Oh, no, your left-wing comment directly ties into my bus ride I just had.
Oh, poor bus driver.
Yeah, it's the 1-2 punch. At the first stop, yeah, you have to take two buses. I'm that lucky. But at the first stop, well, if I'm being honest, there was an option to walk down to Beechwood, catch one bus, but then that didn't happen. The bus got weird. Anyway, but then so I was waiting for the second bus. There was a dude full-on Joker laughing. I even recorded it, and he never stopped. Like, I was there the whole, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Was he listening to an audiobook or something?
Here's the creepier part.
Okay.
He was listening to something. What it appeared that he was listening to was just a sound clip or something of someone going, I love you, I love you, I love you. I think he was just hitting, it was like a talk boy or something, which is not a dated reference, you are. But no, and he just kept being like, ha, 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 like it was, like that wasn't great, but it was a full on Joaquin Phoenix style Joker laugh, endless. And he's just walking a circle around the bus stop. There's probably 10 of us there and just doing that cackle. And occasionally he'd be talking too, but I couldn't hear him, or maybe he'd comment or something. But I'm also like, I kind of try to just ignore people unless I have to intervene in some way. Not that I'm like some big toughy, but I put on my skull gloves just in case. I'm like, well, you know, he's not going to mess with a guy with skull gloves, you know.
Well,
but
let's hope we don't hear any more about this person in the newspapers later today.
It's weird. And then we were like driving away on the bus. You could hear him laugh one last time. And he was just waiting at the bus stop. I was like, I don't know what this guy's deal is. No one's going to believe this happened. And that was not even the weirdest guy on the bus rides home, you know. So in the second bus, there was this dude who went up to the driver and was, I think he got on like by the comic shop too, which was more disturbing. And then he got on, I think, at the side or something happened. I don't know. He didn't tap or whatever. For whatever reason, he felt the need to go to the driver. And then he was like, I'm going to the soccer game at Lansdowne at 1 o'clock. And you're just like, okay, that's fine. And then he's talking about women's, or no, it wasn't even women's soccer. Then he got to women's hockey and then talking about, oh, I support women's hockey, of course, but not the left wing owners and executives. And I'm just like, why? The driver's not asking you this, man. Like, no one's talking about politics except you. And it went on. And he stayed the whole ride. He stayed. People would get on and he'd sort of like go back 4 feet and wait. And then they leave. And then he's like, yeah, but anyway, he's like, yeah, you know about cancel culture, right? And the guy's like, yeah, I guess. And he's like, I've been canceled several times myself. And I audibly laughed. Like, I don't think he heard me. And this dude looked very much like my best friend, Nick, fortunately. But
it was Nick.
He looked like an accountant, basically. Like, just normal looking dude, glasses, whatever. And just to see him, you would think kind of the opposite. But like, he, I guess, I don't know. I couldn't hear everything he said, and nor did I want to. But I'm not trying to talk politics. I'm not trying to this or that. You know, obviously people know where we stand. We just want everyone to be cool with each other.
Yeah.
But buddy, he's doing his job. Nobody, it says a lot about you when you feel the need to go up to someone doing their job and rant for 20 minutes about left-wing politics and I've been canceled all the time. Go sit down.
I think that's what the internet is a lot, is people have a voice.
Yeah. He was basically Twitter, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But anytime somebody says anything that starts normal and nice of, I'm going to a women's hockey game, I like women's hockey, you're like, cool.
Yeah.
But then when they say, but.
Yeah.
It's never good. But I also like puppies.
Yeah, especially when it's like, it's I support always women's blank, but, and you're like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, I feel so bad for anyone in retail. I was telling you, like, we get it every once in a while, but not often, of kind of getting cornered in the box office, yeah, you know? But in happier news, yes, Dawn of the Dead, and I want to remember to talk about this. I didn't know, I think this was an 11th hour thing. So Christy, as we speak, is in Monroeville at a comic convention.
Oh, that's, what? And you said a lot of things just now.
So last night, Lee plugged in his laptop and got a Zoom call from Christy live from the Monroeville Mall.
Uh-huh.
So she was kind of like a reporter on the scene. Like, here's Christy in Pittsburgh, what, from the Dawn of the Dead Mall, right before you guys are about to watch Dawn of the Dead. Technology is so easy now. Like, we can plug in a laptop down by the screen, which is nice when we have rentals where they want to do a PowerPoint or whatever.
Yeah.
So you plug in that laptop, push a couple buttons upstairs, and then that goes on the big screen. And so I didn't know what was happening. I was at home, but Lee sent a couple photos and there was Christy on the big screen like a reporter going, here we are, folks.
So I was picturing like she was just Zoom calling Lee only at his home or something, but you're saying like she was on screen at the screening.
Correct.
Okay. All yeah, right. Yeah, that yeah changes everything. But it's also kind of even weirder. That sounds so surreal.
I know. But a fun thing was last night, April 12th, it's a funny anniversary, but it was the 45th anniversary of the Pittsburgh premiere of Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
Before that, it screened overseas at a couple festivals or something.
Yeah, Cannes for sure.
And so Christy is at this fest, and I'm jealous. She's going to meet John Carpenter.
Oh, what? That's random.
Pittsburgh, for some reason, gets really big nerd celebrities. Uh-huh. That's where a couple years ago Lee met Burt Reynolds.
Oh,
it might be where he infamously met Richard Dreyfuss, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's a great photo. Him and his son are so into it, and Dreyfuss is like, okay, so let's just get this one over with.
Also, Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis are there.
Cutthroat Island's Gina Davis?
Oh, I love Cutthroat Island.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I just listened to a podcast, and they were talking specifically about Batman and Robin.
Okay.
And it was a bunch of nerds talking about, it was an offshoot of this podcast I listened to called Wizards, which is all about Wizard Magazine, where each episode they dissect a Wizards magazine and they have in artists and writers. Wow. And stuff. It's really, if you're a nerd, it's very interesting.
Are they doing it like issue 1, 2, 3?
Yes.
Like, okay, so it's in a row.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll do half episodes because they have too much to talk about.
I used to read Wizard back in the day, but then I stopped at a certain point. So I was like, not to be a jerk, but I might not listen as much to those episodes.
But the heyday, that was a magazine. And
Oh, God, yeah.
Just had your namesake Eric Larson on for an episode because he was right in the heat of that.
Yeah, the less famous Eric Larson.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. But they were talking about Batman and Robin, and there was one guy, and God bless him,
oh boy,
but he kept defending Batman and Robin.
I'm not going to lie, I did like it at the time, because we didn't have a lot going on in Perry Sound, and I went inside, and I knew it was dumb, but I mean, it's enjoyable, and it's like Poison Ivy is hot, like, I don't know.
It's weird where it's almost a tribute to Batman 66,
yeah,
but still looks modern, but is so, and not even campy, but so punny, and yeah. So, the other guy said he got to go to a free preview screening, and he said the crowd was really excited, and you could tell they all really wanted to be there, and there was a buzz in the air, and right away, there's the, almost like Sam Raimi-esque kind of zoom shots,
yeah,
but they go right to the butts.
Okay,
and
yes.
Goes, when that happened, he said you could hear the whole crowd kind of starting to turn. And then
the nipples, the bat nipples.
Yeah. And then halfway through the movie, he said a number of people left. And his dad left. And
what? He left him there?
Yeah. He said he was going to the washroom. He said he was with his whole family. He had 4 passes.
Yeah.
And his dad left to go to the washroom. Didn't come back.
Nice.
And then they found him outside, and he was just like sitting in the food court, and he was like, I didn't want to go back.
He was in the fetal position. He's like, that movie broke me.
But we all have movies like that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I don't try to knock people off their love pedestal of a movie. But this guy, he probably saw it when he was a kid. He probably had the action figures. And it is a bright, fun movie.
Oh, yeah, colorful for sure.
But when you dissect it, it doesn't make sense.
No.
Schwarzenegger is so miscast.
Well, that's the main problem, I think. Yeah, that him. Because like even Poison Ivy like kind of works, sort of. Bane is terrible. That's a whole other story.
Especially because Bane is supposed to be the mental and physical equivalent to Batman.
Yeah, and he doesn't even talk.
No. Especially that they were coming right on the heels, not on the heels, but of the Batman animated series, which had this amazing Mr. Freeze episode.
Oh, yeah.
And you would think somebody more like Patrick Stewart should have been cast in the part or something like that.
There was a good Bane
arc
too as well in that. So it's like, it's not every other version of Bane has him talk and be smart. Although, I mean, him in Dark Knight Rises or whatever, I mean, like maybe he didn't end so smart, but like he had smart parts when you could understand what he was saying.
But I think about that with, for me, for stuff like Goonies and Monster Squad.
Yeah.
Where I know people have seen it as adults and been like, I see why you love it, but I only kind of critique it as a grown-up, where you critique it as an 8-year-old.
Well, there's more to that, at least, than Batman and Robin, which, you know, I knew it was a candy-coated nonsense, but it's, like, I think the biggest issue of it is Arnold. I mean, not the only issue by any means, but it's just like, you could have, I don't know, somehow there might have been a good movie in there. I don't know.
It was like the other thing, too, where even the complaint with Batman Returns, which I like, is that they could have toned it down and been like, this could just be a Catwoman movie.
Yeah.
You could have had more story in there. And by the time, that timeline too, Batman 89, a phenomenon. And then, God, what is it? Only like 8 years later was Batman and Robin?
Yeah, I guess that's, was it 2000?
No, 97.
97, that's right.
Yeah, and that it killed the franchise.
Yeah.
Was horribly expensive, and I think at the time still made $100 million, but like it cost $200 million at the time.
Yeah, speaking of the crazies, I said it was 2008, it was 2010. Just
close.
We're all about transparency here. I don't want to just pop off and then not correct ourselves later. But
yeah.
But no, that, I mean, I think it's one of those things where like I saw it at 1 p.m. on a Sunday as a, 15-year-old, I guess.
Yeah.
And for that, I was just, I mean, it was entertaining. I knew it wasn't good, but it's still, like, I find it hard to hate it. But maybe that's because I haven't rewatched it.
Yeah, and that's like Cutthroat Island. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Oh, man, I love that.
But I remember at the time, Gina Davis is awesome.
Sure.
And it had pirates and explosions. And
even Rennie Harlan, like, good director. You know?
Yeah, Rennie Harlan. And I liked Long Kiss Goodnight a lot. Yes. I think that's really underrated.
Which we've discussed destroyed a priceless heritage home where I'm from.
So yeah, like, we all have movies like that. Especially nowadays when somebody sticks their nose up at a kid really liking Minions or Kung Fu Panda. I'm like, no, that's fine. No. It's like,
and let me tell you this, our good friend Scott's from the Symphony, huge fan of the Cutthroat Island soundtrack.
Oh.
The score, obviously.
Do you remember who did it?
I was afraid you were going to ask that because
I'm going to say James Horner.
Like, it was, I think it was like a major, like it was a Hans Zimmer type, maybe.
Yeah, I can't.
He's going to kill me for not remembering that part. He and I, we were just bonding recently about one soundtrack we really liked for a movie that was very ill received, which I do think was 2000 on this one, was the Time Machine remake.
Okay.
With Guy Pearce. And the score was great. And I believe it was Klaus Badelt. And it might have been with Hans Zimmer, if I'm not remembering.
Hans Zimmer's always doing those team ups.
Yeah, I had quite a few scores like when I was a teenager. Like, it's just, I don't know, certain times it works.
I think I listened to it because I like Hans Zimmer, and the trailer for Man of Steel was really good. The trailer was very hopeful. And then the movie came out and it crushed me. I was just like, oh, it's so sad and
dark. I
don't
remember which one that was. Was that the one where he was fighting Zod?
Yeah.
Okay.
And basically it ended with him like threatening people.
And destroying the city pretty much.
And killing thousands of people.
Although they did like at least work back into that in one of the later movies. And I don't remember which one.
Oh, did they?
Was it Justice League? I don't know.
Were they like, oh, we got everybody out of town.
It was the one where Batman was mad at him. Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. I still haven't watched that because I know it's going to make me furious.
Affleck was pretty decent, I thought.
I stand by that too. Where I think in an alternate universe he would have been, he really looks, there's an artist named Greg Capullo.
Okay.
He really looks like Greg Capullo Batman a lot.
I thought you meant the artist. He looks like him. Josh, whatever.
No, he really looks like, and Greg Capullo drew a long run in New 52.
Okay.
So for modern Batman, it kind of was neat that he got cast around the same time.
He's so good at, this is a weird compliment for Ben Affleck, but he's so good at staring angrily.
If that
makes sense, you know, because there's everything's crumbling and he's saving a kid or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And he's, I mean, at least you probably saw the trailer for Batman Superman.
Yeah.
And so there's like, all the destruction of that fight, but he's there as, I guess, Bruce Wayne saving whoever he can. And he's like, saved his kid and he's staring angrily at Superman and just was like, you know. And I was like, man, that's a good angry stare you got there, bud.
Oh, I gotta say, that's, so I somehow didn't even know that. That's actually a good plot twist where he's pissed off at Superman because Superman was running around.
Now you kind of want to watch it, you know? And so that's the whole plot of Batman Superman. The reason he's mad at him was not, you'd think they were going to go a Kingdom Come route with that, which they kind of hinted at, but not really. Yeah. And no, but it was basically like, it was because of that Zod fight in Man of Steel that he's mad at Superman.
Yeah.
But as I'm going to go ahead and guess it's one of those by the end, they're like, wait, we need to team up to beat some other guy who's actually a threat.
I know they became friends because both of them have moms named Martha.
That's it. That was the Martha scene. Yeah. So that, I mean, you know, not the dumbest movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. I'm just mad at the filmmaker now because he's really on a rant about how he thinks Batman should be running around killing people.
Is it Snyder?
Snyder, yeah.
Okay, I can't remember anymore. It's usually Snyder.
I was like, did you read a Batman comic before you got the gig? And all these really good creators, like Grant Morrison, who I love, is like, you clearly don't get Batman if you think he should be running around with guns killing people.
There's definitely been gun-related issues with Batman in the comics. Like, I specifically remember a cover where he was holding a gun. I don't remember the story at all, or if that is just
that was some weird tease.
Because they trick you where he's like, oh, I was holding it up to throw it in this garbage can over here. Like, oh, you got me on that one, Batman.
He was giving a speech about how he hates guns.
Yeah, you know, so it's, I'm sure that they have had off-world or off, you know, whatever, black metal stuff where he's used a gun, I'm sure, but.
Yeah. But for, like, that main thing, it's like, he doesn't like guns because his parents got killed with a gun.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, and also it's like, he doesn't need a gun. Like, he's got all these wild gadgets.
Yeah. Where does he get those wonderful toys?
Yeah, I know. This is what I'm saying. So it's, I don't know how we always work back to comic books, but
it's a comic book podcast, isn't it?
I was saying, that, you know, well, I'm not going to keep mentioning Scott, but he was praising the previous episode. And I was like, didn't we just basically talk about comic books for 20 minutes? And he was like, no, it was fine. You know? So yeah, like all of
we
that
don't
to say,
do research.
The whole Zack Snyder thing is really funny to me because I like some of his stuff, but it seems like, I don't know, the Rebel Moon stuff that is coming out now, it seems like not a lot of people are hyped for that. And there's like a comic book tie-in series and all this. I think they probably wanted action figures and all that. And like, not to be a jerk, but even less so than Avatar, I'm not seeing people talking about this.
Well, my friend Fred watched it on a plane ride to Australia, if I'm getting this right, I believe. Shout out to Fred.
And Australia, I guess.
But he's like my canary in the coal mine, where like every few years he'll be like, yeah, don't watch Rebel Moon.
But like,
yeah,
I mean,
don't watch that last Fantastic Four movie. Where it's like,
come on.
Because back in the day, I'd watch anything. I'd watch the Punisher straight to video movie. But now we're in this golden age where I'm just like, I don't have enough hours in the day. So I've never had an afternoon where I'm like, I'm sitting around the house with nothing to watch. There's always something to watch.
Well, yeah, and the Snyder Cut of Justice League is better, but it's like 3 hours at least. And so I'm like, I can't in good conscience tell you to watch it. It's fine. Like,
yeah,
it's not awful, but it's like quite long, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing. Like, there's not, I'm starting to realize that maybe I'm getting older.
Yeah, what?
Supposedly.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I still can't, you know, I don't know. There's movies I'll never get to, but I'm still not ready to admit that and pare them down just yet.
Someone a while back was like, I really like this show Vikings. And I told him, I was like, never say never, but I'm probably never going to watch Vikings.
No.
And the reason why is because we just caught up on Better Call Saul.
Oh, good
show.
Which
was a masterpiece.
Dude, what a show.
Vikings has to climb that ladder.
Come on.
And be like, oh, we haven't finished watching Bob's Burgers, The Simpsons, Doom Patrol, Star Wars stuff, you know. Is there going to be a day where we're like, oh, we've caught up. I can watch Vikings.
Yeah.
I don't think there will be.
Do you think you'll ever finish Dark Shadows?
Okay, Dark Shadows update. So it's funny. Tubi now sends out little prompts, right? Which I think every kind of app does.
Sure.
Where it's like, you have two shows that you haven't finished yet. Maybe today's the day.
Oh, they're guilting you?
Yeah, encouraging you to like binge through a series.
It's like an Italian grandmother seeing if you're hungry, basically.
Yeah.
They're like, come
like,
on.
And I'm like, Tubi, I'm on episode 640. And there's 1,250 episodes. I'm doing pretty good.
It sounds menacing, too. They're like, today's the day, Josh. And it's like, why does it have a knife emoji?
At 640, a very major character just got introduced.
Ooh.
So it shows you how far we are.
Okay.
Because I was looking at some stuff at the library on their app, and there's a Dark Shadows Vampirilla crossover comic.
What?
But they say in it is a character called Quentin, who I haven't been introduced to yet. In those 600 episodes, in 635, 640, the ghost of Quentin shows up.
Oh.
And so I'm like, oh my God, if I would have read the Vampirilla comic first, it would have spoiled this.
I guess.
So like, even though the show's from the 60s, I'm avoiding spoilers.
Oh my God. I don't even know. I can't even. How many episodes did you say there were? Like 2,000?
No, I believe it's around 1,250.
Oh, a mere 1,250.
A mere 1,250. Because it's 5 years of a somewhat daily or 4 or 5 days a week soap opera.
Right. Oh God.
And luckily they're half hour episodes or 25 minute episodes. If they had been an hour, that would have increased that, right? But
no.
I started watching during COVID, and now we're 4 years later, and I'm halfway through because I don't watch every day. I try, but there's days where today I'm not going to watch an episode probably.
Yeah.
So maybe 4 more years, 3 more years I'll finish.
Much to Tubi's chagrin, you don't watch every day.
I should concentrate and just like, I'm not watching anything else.
I can't, I don't know how to ask this without sounding like whatever, but like, is it entertaining? Like,
no, I would have stopped. It is genuinely good writing.
Okay.
And very fun soap opera, and especially that there's werewolves and Draculas and
sure.
Satan in it. And it's, I don't know if you know this show, but it's from the guy who went on to create Kolchak.
Okay, yeah.
And I love Kolchak, and then that influenced X-Files. So yeah, I would have given up on it, you know, 200 or 300 episodes in, but it started as a really good, purely non-supernatural, gothic soap opera.
Non-supernatural,
no.
And yet it's
and then ratings
based?
Started to dip, and they're like, let's start introducing supernatural aspects.
Okay.
And then they introduced the Dracula, Barnabas Collins.
Okay.
Was a big ratings boost, and then it just went nuts, and supposedly it goes even more crazy. We just got the first werewolf introduced in the current story arc.
Okay.
And full-on old-timey, his face switches into a werewolf, you know?
Is it good?
It's cool, yeah.
Okay, because, like, I mean, there has to be filler episodes somewhere in there.
But I really like it. I find it very entertaining, so.
It's like Barnabas tries to cook, I don't even know if that was the name, but anyway, Barnabas tries to cook breakfast for everyone with ill results.
Okay, we got distracted talking about Dark Shadows, but we're cutting it a little bit short today just because we're trying to do 2 in 1 day and then go watch a movie.
Yeah. We got a lot going on.
So let us just quickly mention the movie screening the week of Friday, April 19th.
Nice.
The first kind of mainstream second run movie we have is called One Life, starring Anthony Hopkins.
Oh.
British stockbroker Nicholas Winton visits Czechoslovakia in the 1930s and forms a plan to assist with the rescue of Jewish children before the onset of World War II.
Oh, God. Wow. That's not... Wow. That...
So historical drama, kind of Schindler's List-y kind of thing.
That description just kept going.
Yeah.
That was like five movies in there.
And it's got perfect ratings from London Evening Standard and San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh, man.
Won the Audience Award at the Palm Springs International Film Fest. Ooh. And getting a lot of buzz for... to win more. I don't know if it's we're in a weird time. I don't know if this counts as a 2023 movie or a 2024 movie.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, this definitely sounds like something they're going to try to bump up around Oscar time.
Probably, yeah. And a lot of the quotes I read was like, another Oscar-worthy performance from Anthony Hopkins.
I think, can we just like assume he's going to deliver an Oscar-worthy performance at this point? What do we need to say for every movie?
Then we have the Ottawa premiere of a fun, lighthearted documentary called Remembering Gene Wilder.
Oh, nice.
I think it's just one of those nice, you know, best of real clips. A lot of talking heads of people saying nice things about him.
Yeah.
I know there's his narration in it, which I think they kind of pulled either from like radio interviews or that kind of thing. Yeah. So it's just a nice Gene Wilder documentary that I'm sure will make us all want to go and watch Young Frankenstein and all that stuff.
Yeah. And a lot of people pointed to the guy from The Bear who is going to be playing Bruce Springsteen in an upcoming movie.
Oh, yeah.
He looks a lot like Gene Wilder. And that they should try to do a biopic with him as well. And I was like, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Then we have the Rocky Horror Picture Show returning, hosted by the absent friend Shadowcast.
Love it.
Another Ottawa premiere, a movie that had no information, and now that information is coming out, people seem to really like it, is called Sting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
An Australian creature feature.
Oh, I didn't know it was Australian.
Yeah, and it's getting a lot of buzz of being just a good old fun kind of drive-in classic giant spider creature feature.
Awesome, man. And then they're Australian, obviously, the people in it too, I assume. So it's like got to be fun accents and stuff too.
Well, and they have to deal with giant terrifying things all the time.
That's actually true. You know, like they do have them. They're maybe not as big as that, but they're like, crikey, look at that spider, you know?
Doesn't Australia have... per capita, the most dangerous beasties anywhere?
I think I have heard something like that. It probably sounded better when a scientist said it, but like I've heard like similar to that.
Then we continue along with our George A. Romero, Tom Savini month.
Yes.
With a movie that neither of them directed. William Lustig directed it.
Yeah.
But it gets such buzz as a Tom Savini film, Maniac.
Yeah.
Just because it's groundbreaking gory effects.
For sure. And Lustig went on to found, I believe it was Blue Underground?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and so he's put out a bunch of good releases from that. And I think he died not that long, or like, well.
I think so,
he was
yeah.
pretty young, too. And so, no, he directed some pretty cool stuff. I'm pretty sure he did Friday the 13th 4, but I might be totally off base on that.
And Maniac is one of those kind of cornerstone early 80s horror movie panic.
Yeah.
Like, don't let the children watch it.
Yeah, no, that's, I think he did Red Scorpion too with, what's his name? The guy from Rocky IV that's not Stallone.
Oh, Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, yeah. I think.
I didn't know he did that.
I'm popping off now. I'm not even going to look it up. Like, I'm just, that's what we do. Two podcasts in a row, I'm just saying whatever.
Yeah. And then we have a couple of rentals. One is for Earth Day called The Condor and the Eagle.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
That's a movie from a couple years back, and it is presented by Ecology Ottawa, and it's a documentary that takes viewers on a journey across the Americas, exploring the interconnected struggles of Indigenous communities fighting to protect their land from evil fossil fuel industries. I put in the evil part.
Oh, yeah, but, well, we know. Is it on Earth Day that we're planning?
It is, yeah.
Nice, which is?
Monday the 22nd.
Of course, I remembered that. All right, perfect.
So everybody be extra nice on Earth Day.
Yeah, yeah, and come out and see this. This is the only power that you should use, is coming here to use our power to watch that movie.
And then the one other thing is called Mountains on Stage, which as I record this may already be sold out. This is always bonkers. It's always filled with all the mountain climbers in town.
Oh, yes.
And it's always terrifying clips of people free soloing up a mountain as you watch it and bite your fingernails and go, don't fall.
It's always stuff Josh and I would never do.
Oh, God. I wouldn't even do that with all the safety precautions.
Seriously, I wouldn't even be at ground zero at the bottom being like, I'll wait for you guys to come back. I'll make the cocoa.
Yeah. Oh, God. And Gwen climbs. And anytime we watch something like this, I'm just like, don't do that.
You're like, please don't tell me about when you do these things.
Free solo. And it's these nowadays with drones and things, you can get all these shots and they're ridiculously high in the air.
Oh, yeah. It's like Mission Impossible 2, like the beginning of that, but for reals.
Oh, scary.
Yeah, too much. Too much.
So, yeah. So that is our movie screening the week of Friday, April 19th. And we're going to wrap things up now to go record another podcast.
Hooray. But it'll be different. Just think it was a totally different time than we
did. Yeah. So thanks for listening, everybody. You can go to mayfairtheater.ca to get updates on upcoming stuff and all the social medias. And we'll see you next time for another edition of the Mayfair Theater Podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, and a huge shout out to our follower Like Water for Hovercrafts.
Oh.
Who came through with the movie that my wife was trying to figure out.
Oh, yeah.
Which was called Rainbow War. And it turns out it is a 20-minute short that was nominated for an Academy Award in 1987 or 85, depending where you look.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I never checked SoundCloud comments. That person commented and was 100% right. So you are the king or queen or whatever.
Internet is not always a place of evil.
Yeah, we pulled it off. I looked like a hero and so did you.
Yay. And, God, another couple seconds. I watched it. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. Everybody watch that, Rainbow War, and thank my wife and Like Water for Hovercrafts.
Yay, thanks everybody. Okay, now we're leaving. Bye!
Analysis Films, the distributors of the controversial box office hit Caligula, now bring you a new challenge. Maniac. No horror that ever froze your blood. No fear that ever inched its way up your spine. No terror that ever pinned you sweating to your seat can prepare you for Maniac. You can tell yourself there's nothing out there, but you know better. You can sense something stalking the dark streets, something dangerously out of control. You know a madman's out there, and what he's looking for is you. If you think you've seen it all, you haven't seen anything until you've met the challenge of Maniac.
I told you not to go out tonight.
Maniac, he'll tear the life out of you. No one under 17 admit it.